This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, hello. You are listening to Address Unknown, and we are back with episode 27, where we finish off our European summer tour, spending some time in Montenegro, returning to Jonica's newfound retirement country, Italy, and complete with our 3-week visit to Morocco.
Hey, hey. As Mark mentioned, in this episode, we are going to be exploring Montenegro before returning to heaven on earth, Italy, and finally ending with our stay in the North African country of Morocco. It was a lot of planes, a lot of trains, and ferries. So let's get into it. Last we left off, we were in Mostar, Bosnia. And so we left there. We hopped aboard a bus, which we thought was going to be just a quick 4-hour ride. That's not actually that long in the scheme of things for some of our journeys. But this turned into a 6-plus-hour ride because you have to do a bunch of border checks, right? You're going from one country, you have to do a border check as you're leaving that country. So everyone gets off the bus, gets their passport stamp, you get back on the bus. Then you drive a little ways, and then you get to the border of the next country, which in this case, obviously, we're going over to Montenegro, and so you have to get your passport stamped there as well, and then everyone gets back on the bus, and then you continue on.
Also, just don't forget, these bus drivers like to smoke. Most Eastern Europeans like to smoke, and that means every stop is at least 15 minutes. We break, we get a coffee, we get back on the bus. So what is a 4-hour ride could be done in a car in like 2.5 hours?
Yeah. But it was very cheap, very affordable. Yes. And we weren't renting a car. And honestly, like I said, I think previously, if I don't have to drive, I'm not going to.
Yeah, don't care. I can sit on a bus and look at the scenery. Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, totally fine. But after all of that, we finally arrived in the city of Tivat, Montenegro. Tivat has become very well known in very niche communities. Let's be real. It's primarily with Russian yacht owners. There is a very large port in Tivat that has been built up over the past few years. It's actually fairly new, and it's home to some of the world's largest private ships. Like, these are no joke. The third largest sailing yacht in the world was there, along with many others that would put any boat that's on below deck to shame. So it was crazy to see. I thought that sailboat the first day was Jeff Bezos' boat. I was like, holy shit.
We had to look it up online. You kept trying to figure out whose it was. Yeah. It took up an entire portion of the marina.
Yeah, it was insane. Absolutely insane.
It had security guards outside of it, like on the concrete dockway. Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. So while our Airbnb in Tivat was not that great, it's a beach community, kind of felt Jersey Shore-ish again. So it just was very bare bones.
I think if our budget was higher, maybe we could expect a little bit more. Yeah, but because of where we are, we're like,
Yeah. But the location was amazing. We could walk 2 minutes down to the sea where there are a bunch of different beach clubs. I'm now saying beach clubs with air quotes because this is not like you're not in Ibiza, right? You're not in Miami. Most of these are pretty run down. Half the chairs and umbrellas are broken, but you know what? They're affordable.
The price is right.
Yeah, they provide you with a place to sit. They'll bring you Aperol spritzes and you can go into the ocean and that's kind of all you need. There's also a public stretch of the seaside that's basically, let's be real, just a concrete walkway.
Literally, it's a concrete platform, like a slab.
And so you could either, if you wanted to there, you could also rent chairs or you could just throw your towel down and lay on the concrete. But it's fun. It's, you know, it's what the locals do. And it was nearing the end of summer, so it was packed. It was very touristy. And the people watching was just amazing.
So many people wearing swimsuits that may not fit. And not because they're too large.
No, not too large. Tivat also has a very healthy nightlife scene. So we would go out to dinner down by the marina some nights, walk along the port, hoping to get an invitation onto one of these boats.
To the sailing yacht, yeah.
Any of them. Any of them, because they're all incredible. But that did not happen. So when we didn't get the invite, we would end up at a club dancing until the early hours or at a bar. There was lots of beautiful places to have drinks and chill or dance the night away, whatever you desired. After a little less than a week in Tivat, we headed about an hour south via bus to Budva. Our Airbnb was literally above the bus station, but not as loud as I thought it was going to be. Thank God the buses don't come and go all through the night.
Yeah, it wasn't 24/7, yeah. But it was about 7 a.m. till about 11 o'clock every day, and you'd hear the call for each bus.
Yeah,
you get
yeah,
used to it.
Yeah, you did. And the bus station was surrounded. Oh my God, some weird like miniature petting zoo situation.
We were walking from the bus station and all of a sudden we saw some rabbits.
Like, well, there's a bunch of rabbits in there. And different breeds of rabbits.
And then there was a peacock.
Exotic ones.
Yeah, there was exotic rabbits with different fur coming off their ears that was all weird. There was peacocks. There was tortoises.
Ducks. Tons of ducks and birds.
And we don't know who, it was part cafe, part bus station. We don't know who was monitoring the animals. But it was certainly a distraction because everyone who was walking on the sidewalk who just got their big, oh, look at this.
So it was just like a constant traffic jam.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their luggage, they've got their backpacks, and all you're trying to do is get through, but you can't because, of course, everyone has to stop and look at the bunnies. It was very bizarre. I would love to know what they do with these animals in the winter because it's not like it doesn't get cold there.
Yeah, or at night, who takes care of these things?
Anyway, it was very strange. Budva was a larger and even more lively town than Tivat, and so we spent a couple of days again chilling at different beach clubs, and then one day, I think probably my favorite day of our whole time in Montenegro, was we took a boat to Hawaii Beach, which is on St. Nicola Island. Now, there's a bunch of different beach areas that you can go to. Some of them get really crowded, but we just happened to be walking and trying to figure out like where to catch this boat to get to this island, and these women were like, hey, here is a package that we offer, free transportation to and from. You got the beach. And it was like, it would have been the same price basically if we would have paid for the more public boat. And then by the time we got there and paid for the chairs and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was fabulous because we got there kind of early.
We were the only people there.
Yeah. It was private beach.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Water was amazing.
Mountains coming right out of the ocean.
Yeah. Stunning.
Great views.
It was so beautiful. So we got our chairs. We sat there. This little, like, again, air quotes, club is run by a family. And so, you know, they'll bring you out drinks if you want. And it got busier throughout the day. Like, a lot of people kept coming. But we were happy that we got there early because we got to lock down, like, a prime location.
It's like, you said it was a family operation. It was very, like, the mom would come by and be like, hey, like, would you guys want to order food? Or what do you want to do? And it's like Croatia 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's very similar geographically. It's very similar as far as the culture is concerned. Like, these people love smoking, as I said. But also, like, it's just yet to really take off.
Yeah.
Montenegro.
It's still a lot of just local tour. We went over, we ordered lunch, and then they started this massive wood-burning fire. And I had the best, I think I had swordfish.
You had swordfish, yeah.
It was the best fish I've had in my entire life. And we got a bunch of vegetables, all these different sides. It wasn't cheap. We were kind of shocked.
Well, they had to bring it all there. They had to bring it all to the island.
They did. But, you know, it's one of those situations you're like, well, you're there. What else are you going to do?
You didn't pack snacks.
Did not pack snacks. But the food was incredible. Yeah. I think totally worth it.
It was worth it, for sure.
A magical, magical day. So after almost 2 weeks of relaxing and just enjoying Montenegro, it was time to move on. And we found ourselves once again on that ferry, that 8-hour ferry trip to Bari. So I guess going back, we took a bus from Montenegro to Dubrovnik. We literally spent 5 hours. Well, I mean, 5 hours there, and then we slept, and then we got up and we got on a very early ferry to Bari. Just the same exact boat, and we knew what to expect this time.
I mean, it was our third time on the fucking ferry, so we weren't going to screw it up.
Well, it wasn't the third time. It was only the second.
We took the same ferry years ago.
Oh, yeah. I get, well, kind of. Sure. The same crossing.
Yes, Let's say the same crossing. I'll agree with that.
That boat. That first boat was nothing like these
boats.
It was
9 years ago. Things change. But I agree. It was the same crossing, we could say that.
Yes.
That we had done. And by this time, we kind of felt like seasoned veterans. We knew more what...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
To expect. Yeah. We knew what to bring for snacks.
We knew to go get our tickets ahead of time. We got them the day beforehand, which was a clutch move. That was incredible. We didn't even think that could happen, and we did. And we were like, thank God, because now we don't have to get up as early. We stayed in a very nice hostel that was literally right across from where the ferry left.
Yeah.
It was great. So we had our 8-hour ferry ride.
You can do this by flight, too, but we thought the ferry's fun. We have time, and you're spending 8 hours getting ready to go to an airport, getting on the flight, getting off the airport, taking a cab to the hotel anyway. So let's do this.
It's totally fine. So if you've been following along on our journey, you might remember that we were in Bari back in June, actually.
Yes. Love this town.
The start of our European summer tour, in fact. It was literally our second stop. So we found ourselves back because we would be making our way eventually, after a week, across Italy to visit some dear friends. But before we did that and made our way to Naples, having some time to kill, we decided to go to Monopoly. About 9 years ago, we started our honeymoon in Puglia. We spent most of our time in Ostuni. Like, we didn't go to Monopoly during that time, so it was a little bit further south. But I have been obsessed ever since with wanting to spend more time there. So we arrived in Bari via ferry again, took a quick bus ride to the train station, and then took a very quick, amazing 30-minute express train down to Monopoly. And once we arrived there, oh my God, Mama Giuseppe met us. Stayed at this Airbnb, and it was perfect. It was an amazing location.
Yeah.
And so I'd been chatting with Giuseppe, who's the...
Giuseppe's the owner, proprietor of the Airbnb.
And he lives in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And so his mother, who we just fondly call Mama Giuseppe, met us at the Airbnb. She didn't speak a lot of English.
She knew the word for you in English. For you. That's all she knew.
That's all she needed to know because she had so much stuff for us. She had little... I don't remember the names of the things anymore.
They're like little bread crustinis. You eat them... The Italians eat them at breakfast, or they had them with coffee.
Yeah.
But she had...
You had two different kinds.
She had two different kinds in glass jars for me. She kept saying, for you, for you.
She had fruit for us. Yep. We had wine.
Yep.
We had still water, sparkling water, There were beach towels.
An umbrella.
There was a beach umbrella.
Everything was for you.
Everything was for you.
For you and for you and for you.
The cutest thing ever. So Mama Giuseppe.
I ate both jars full of the cookies before we left and little bread pastries.
You did. So that was incredible. And not only was Mama Giuseppe incredible, but that Airbnb was also incredible. Great location. We are right off the main church square, which is the central cathedral. And less than a 5-minute walk from the main beach, which is Cala Porta Vecchia. Great beach. So when you think of quintessential small Italian beachside towns, that's Monopoly.
Oh, just postcard shit.
Oh my God. Every afternoon, most of the shops close for at least a few hours. Church bells are always chiming. The old people are baking on the rocks, caked in baby oil, drinking their beer and their coffee. And at night, there's more strolling and drinking wine and eating seafood. You can get lost in the winding streets of Old Town, ending up at bars in the port area.
It's literally just heaven on earth. It's just a different pace of life. And people there are going slow and they enjoy it. And it's no stress. I don't know how else to explain it. I mean, it's nothing like we are used to.
And so picturesque. Like, you can't make this up. Like, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
So in the Airbnb, it was nice. We had actually a small kitchen. And so Mark found a local market where he would go and buy mozzarella and prosciutto every day. You were very excited that you learned
Go see the same guy every day.
Yeah. You learned how much to order, the weight of it, and how much it costs. We found a basil plant finally. We'd been looking for one forever. So that was great. So again, just really good food, and we can make food in the apartment, which was also lovely. So most days we would pack up some snacks, some food, and head down to the main beach, laying our towels on the rocks, people watching, swimming in the crystal clear water. You know, like most small summer towns, you see the same people every day. And of course, especially because you're in Italy, these people are going to be characters. Remember the old man who was the smoker?
The Godfather.
He was like the Godfather.
He was like, everything was so...
God, the man didn't stop smoking, but he just held court and everybody went up to him and said, ciao.
He had like the Sicilian gold horn chain necklace thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just eating crostini with mozzarella and drinking beer and smoking. And that was the day.
Yeah, that was it.
And there was a beach umbrella. He wasn't getting near that. He was not going to go underneath that beach umbrella, and they would change their outfits.
Yeah, but this is something that we noticed. It happened in Montenegro too. And maybe in Croatia. I don't remember it so much in Croatia, but most people bring they're wearing a swimsuit and then they bring another swimsuit with them. So they go swimming and then they find somewhere to go hide, or they wrap a towel around themselves and they change into second swimsuit and hang the first swimsuit usually on their umbrella. And then once they've gone swimming in the second swimsuit, they change back into first swimsuit. Now, in theory, I totally get this. I understand.
So your butt doesn't get wet.
Yeah, I totally get it.
There's
a reason. Yes, you're not supposed to sit around in a wet swimsuit all day.
Right.
There is no way that swimsuit dried in that amount of time. So I'm sorry. Okay, you're sitting in a slightly less wet swimsuit than the other one. But whatever. That's what they do. They all have tons of swimsuits hanging from their umbrella. You try not to look when all of a sudden someone's just like kind of throwing a towel around themselves and changing, and that's what happens.
No one cares.
A short train ride away from Monopoli is the town Poligiano a Mare. This town is very popular for one of its beaches, and there is a very good chance, if you're on the gram, that you have seen this beach. It is stunning. It's situated between these two massive rock faces. There's buildings on the top of them. It's that, you know, quintessential white Italian structures. And the rocky beach just leads you into the sea. And it's beautiful. I've never seen anything like it. So I've seen this a lot on Instagram. It was cool to see it IRL, but it was packed. And so we were like, we're not going to stop here.
Hard pass on that.
Yeah. Take a pic and keep going on, because there were better beaches further down the way that were not as busy. In fact, we found one where you jumped from the
cliff jumping
of the rocks.
It was pretty good, yeah.
Into the ocean. We were just laying on a concrete slab again, because that's what you do. after our little spot, got in the shade, we meandered back and we had found this like really beautiful, picturesque again, seaside restaurant where we had incredible seafood and wine just overlooking the ocean. After we finished, we'd walk down this little staircase and once again posted up on these rocks. And this beach was a little bit different. It had almost like this natural little wading pool that you could like go into that was much more shallow because the waves could get kind of aggressive over there, but this little part was protected. And it was just amazing. It was an incredible day. And literally, what was it, like a 15-minute train ride?
Yeah, 15 minutes from Napa, easy as.
And like so, and the trains are so affordable, right? And they run so frequently. So that was great. On our last night in Monopoly, we stumbled upon a concert in one of the old town squares. It was packed. The drinks were flowing. It was a really big band. It was like a
seven piece band. Yeah, seven piece band.
Super fun to just like watch and kind of be with the locals. And the perfect way, I think, to end a very magical week. And right now I might cry because I loved it so, so much.
Okay. Well, Dronica goes and gets some tissues and tries to get her emotions under control. Let's take a quick break. All right, we are back. Continuing with episode 27 of Address Unknown. And we are here talking about Italy, Southern Italy specifically. And we are en route to a sweet little town called Napoli. Mm-hmm. As Jonica mentioned, our purpose for returning to the southern part of Italy was to reunite with friends from home. Angelo, who we have befriended during COVID times, he's a COVID friend.
At our PA house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was in our pod.
He is originally from Naples. And he's always said that if we ever go to Italy, you have to go to my hometown of Naples. So listen, we were like, we're in the area. Let's do it, right? We arrived in town after a 4-hour bus ride from Bari. So crossing the southern boot of Italy, if you will. Mm-hmm. Naples gets kind of a... O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. O'Reilly
Auto Parts. Bad rap because it's a port town.
I mean, you don't really hear much about it either.
It has a history of being like a little seedy and pretty rough around the edges. And in fact, my dad visited Napoli when he was in his 20s and was told to not go out at night and to like
stay in the hostel.
It's dangerous.
Which I could see. I get it's still rough around the edges, but I think most people, they come in and they leave very quickly. People get on cruise ships.
It's a big cruise ship destination. Yeah,
they drive up to the Amalfi Coast, which is very close by, which we'll get into. But people don't, not a lot of people, I don't feel like stay.
No, it's gritty. They don't, I'm not going to bullshit you. It's a lot of graffiti. It's like a lot of garbage.
It's like a Bari. It's like a Marseille. It's like these port towns.
Things have improved, to say the least, right?
Yeah.
The first evening that we arrived in town, we met up with Angelo, his husband Tim, their good friends Eric and Ricardo, along with Angelo's childhood friend Mary and her partner Massimo. And just to grab some drinks, sit in the piazza, acclimate ourselves. And that evening, Angelo was like, listen, we all should meet for dinner. After drinks, let's go and we'll go grab like pizza, the typical Neapolitan style pie.
And you can't share the pizza. You have to get your own pizza.
Yeah, it's like a thing. Angelo's like, everyone will get their own. So Angelo brings us to the Palazzo Petrucci Pizzeria. And it is amazing. So it's a like rooftop restaurant overlooking the Piazza San Domenico. Mm-hmm. And we all have to get our own pie.
Yeah.
Too much.
Does it have a Michelin star?
Might have one.
Yeah.
Too much pie.
You guys all that night and the next day
complained. We all complained about it.
Oh my God, you guys wouldn't shut up about like, oh, I'm so full and I couldn't sleep because I had so much pizza. No one forced you to eat the entire thing.
It was so good.
Oh my God. And I was just like, I felt great because I had some prosciutto and some cheese and a salad and I was perfect. Sometimes the whole gluten intolerance thing is a blessing.
The rest of the group was worse for wear.
Yeah, you guys were annoying.
But listen, so like we all made it to bed. We all complained. But this was also, we went to it early because Angelo had arranged for the group here, all six of us, to go on a like a tour of the surrounding towns around Napoli, mainly along the coast. And this was the highlight of the trip, really.
This is incredible.
We spent the day visiting these beautiful coastal towns of Ravello and Amalfi and Positano. And this all culminated in lunch in the afternoon at this roadside restaurant in the small village of Priano. I think Priano is how you pronounce it?
I think
it?
So, yeah.
And the best part is a restaurant's called Costa Diva.
Yeah, which just fits our group perfectly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Four gays and Jonica and Mark at Costa Diva. But the food was like, we were some of the only people there. The food was amazing. It was just liter after liter of house wine. And it was on like this cliff's edge.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was just beautiful. And they had, you know, the server would come over and be like, I'll set you guys up. Don't worry about what you want to eat. Like, I'll take care of it for you.
Well, and can I say one of the other best parts of the day is Angelo thinking ahead and booking this van. It was a very nice Sprinter van.
Yeah. Necessary and, for sure.
Oh my God. Because the traffic, the amount of tourists and people that are in these towns.
Amalfi, for sure. And that's a shit show.
And the roads are so tiny and winding and narrow. And our hot driver, Ricardo, was just a gem.
Let's just say I'm the only person in the Sprinter van that wasn't attracted to Ricardo, the driver.
And he drove for a bunch of celebrities. He was telling us stories about how like Denzel Washington was just there.
They were shooting a film.
Yeah. And he's driven Mariah Carey. He was like totally talking shit. Like she's a diva. Shocking. But it was super fun. And he was a very safe, attentive, attractive driver.
Anyway, much as he may have been attentive, It was a long day. It was great. It was like 9 hours, and we would never have been able to go to the Amalfi Coast without this.
So
like,
amazing.
Or any of those small towns. So we get back and listen, like on the surface, I think Napoli, listen, you can walk the streets. There's tons of these little piazzas. There's the Latin Quarter. You can go through all these little alleyways and kind of get lost. It's obviously a very historic port town, which is why there's no organization to the streets. But one of the places that we came across, and this was really the most impressive, I think, was the Galleria Umberto, mm-hmm. which was built between 1887 and 1890. And it's a gallery. It's like a, you know, it's an open air mall, right? It's a vast space.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's a vast space. It's got a huge glass ceiling.
Yeah, a glass ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A glass roof. So think of like a
it's like a smaller version of the very popular mall in Milan that's right off of the main square. It's the same thing, but
yeah.
Not as big, but stunning. Like these structures are stunning. We don't really have these in the States.
No. And it's extremely historic. It's elegantly well preserved. And there's still active like small shops and cafes. And there's also some like current Starbucks type shit as
McDonald's.
Well. Yeah, they have to. They mm-hmm. can't afford the rent otherwise.
Yeah.
Most of the time in Naples was spent eating, I'll be really honest.
So much food.
And while this comes as no real surprise, one of the best experiences that we did have was Angelo's lifelong friend, Mary, says, you should come to my family's house. We'll do like drinks and appetizers and maybe dinner if time allots. And we were like this, okay, yeah, sure, this sounds great. We get to Mary's home and it's a former nunnery that has been converted into housing. Mm-hmm. And her family has the penthouse apartment.
Yes.
Overlooking all of the Gulf of Naples.
Yeah. I mean, all of Naples.
It is a 3,000 square foot deck.
Yeah.
And so we just have this like incredible meal. They had an entire...
She made everything gluten-free,
Everything in Italy. Like, everything's gluten-free.
That was like the craziest thing, too. I was just like, oh my God. I felt so bad because, of course, Italians and gluten-free pasta, like, oy vey. But She did, and she was like very. It was so sweet.
Oh, they had like meat plates and cheese plates. They had
so much food.
They had an entire bowl, and I don't mean like a cereal bowl. I'm talking like a huge salad bowl full of mozzarella from Naples that was like the size of little golf balls, and you could just eat the whole thing.
So good.
I hung out by the bowl for a while and just had mozzarella balls for the majority of the time. I honestly can say like we felt so fortunate to have been invited to this experience.
Yeah,
like, this was one of those like you have to know somebody to know somebody situations.
And it was great conversation, and not everyone's, I mean, you know, we don't speak Italian. And not everyone really spoke English, but we could still have great conversations. And we drank a ton of Negronis and wine and ate a lot of good food. It felt like a very classic, authentic Italian experience.
So after this amazing meal at Mary's place, we had to get some culture while we were in Naples. So the next day, we get up and Angelo had suggested that we visit the San Servo Chapel. And this is because it has the famed marbled veil of Christ. And we are not aficionados when it comes to marble carvings, but certainly this chapel housed more intricately detailed marble carvings than we've ever seen. It didn't look real.
No.
And you can't take photos inside the chapel.
Of course not.
So you have to go online and look at this. Again, San Severo Chapel, and you will see the veiled Christ. It looks as though
translucent sheet
was put over Jesus' body.
Yes.
Leaned down, and you can see veins in the hand. You can see wrinkles in the sheet. Like, it is just...
The detail is stunning.
And it goes for the actual sculptures in the cathedral.
And we did an audio-guided tour of it, too,
true.
Which was great.
That
so that we could learn, about the process and the different... all the different saints and all that stuff, which we know nothing about.
I mean, I know a pretty good deal about saints.
Yeah, because you're just... Yeah, I know. You religion.
From San Severo, we also visited the cloisters of San Giuseppe, which is an outdoor space with these pristine detailed paintings along columns and walls. And again, I believe a former nunnery, if I'm not mistaken, gardens. And you kind of just sit and have some peace while you're there.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Very classic Italian. Kind of, if you've been to the cloisters in New York City, kind of... like that, but
better.
But yeah,
way
much
better.
More meat. I mean, it's in Italy, so yeah, it's much more better.
Perfect way to close out our trip in Napoli.
Yeah. Great time with friends, great experiences, great food. It was amazing. So amazing to see our friends again. We were very lucky, like we've said, to see so many friends on this journey. And so it was nice to kind of be able to close out our European summer tour this way.
From Italy, we were off to Morocco, but not before one small hiccup.
Oh, Jesus.
So we're sitting at the airport in Naples, and we're a bit concerned because there was a storm that had been predicted for that day. We looked at the weather previously, and we're like, shit, this could fuck up our flight. Like, we could be delayed. We don't know what's going to happen. What time are we going to get into Morocco? We're flying to a different continent. We don't know what could happen.
Yep.
So we're sitting here, and as we're waiting at the gate, and we're preparing to board the buses, which they then bring you to the waiting plane. You can see the storm coming at us, and it begins. And we're sitting here, and we thought, what do we care, really? I mean, we're inside. What's there to worry about? We're going to remain dry, but the flight could be delayed. That's the worst case scenario.
They had to force people to get on the bus because you got wet.
Like, you got wet as you were
from
approaching
the terminal to the bus, and people didn't want to deal with that. Little did they know.
Right. So we're
that was just the start of it.
So we're able to get on the bus, and it takes you to the stair car, right, which is like the car that leads up to the plane instead of having a regular jetway. And again, we're thinking, this isn't a big deal. We're running from the bus to get on the stair car. It's pouring rain. We're going to get wet. We'll get a little bit wet, but that's okay. But as we're running, you see the carts holding all the luggage, and none of them are covered. And we start thinking to ourselves, all of these bags are not yet on the plane, and they're getting soaking wet. And all you see is the Italian airport staff running the opposite direction of the bags, of like what they should be loading. They're like, we don't want to get wet. So for the next half hour, the rain pours down and a small waterfall begins to form on top of the suitcases and works its way down to the ground.
Not only that, remember the aisle in the plane? The plane, it was like a river.
Yeah. So needless to say, baggage claim in Casablanca, Morocco, super fun. The bags are still dripping. Everyone's
soaked. Absolutely soaked.
And people are upset. Everyone's like unloading these bags off the carousel and they're still dripping, right? Ours included. So for the first hour in our hotel in Morocco, we spent hanging all of our clothes in different locations in the room, off of a off of a bed table lamp and off of a desk, anywhere you could find to hang clothes because we ran out of hangers. So nothing was damaged. All the podcasting shit was fine.
That's
our
true.
Clothes were soaked.
Yep.
But nothing got really ruined.
No, that is true. The best part was, too, is that it was probably the most humid room we've ever stayed in. So
I was drying four bags of wet clothing. So yeah,
it was humid even though before we got in there, I was like, this isn't going to go well.
I can't even imagine what, and we were purposefully every day on the door. We'd be like, no,
don't come in.
Man, no housekeeping services. Cause it looked like a bomb had gone off.
Oh my God. I don't even know what they would think. They'd be like, what are these people doing? Did they literally wash everything in the bathtub and then hang it up in here? That's what I would think. And it was a nice hotel too. So that would be like a
weird thing. We have dry cleaning services, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just wet.
No, we can't afford that.
Just wet.
Yeah.
So people are probably asking, what's the deal? Why Casablanca? We chose to fly to Casablanca, Morocco's commercial hub, because it was the most economical, right? It was the cheapest place to fly into. Casablanca is a large city. It's huge.
Massive.
It's the fourth largest in Africa, we learned. But it's just a city. It's not a lot of culture. But listen, there is one main attraction. And that is the Grand Hassan II Mosque. The mosque is located right at the edge of the Atlantic Ocean. And it's massive, right?
Yeah, huge.
It's new, too. This was built in 1993. It is not an old mosque. It's pretty impressive, though. It has a retractable roof over the main prayer area. Mm-hmm. So it can open up to the sky. It can hold over 100,000 people during the times of worship, plus another 25,000 people outside on the grounds. It took 7 years to build the mosque with crews working in three different shifts, 24 hours a day. And the king, King Hassan, he was the one responsible for financing the cost of the build of the mosque. And we were told during our tour that there's also some controversy because many of the local people were sort of, I wouldn't say forced, but maybe motivated to contribute to the final cost to build the mosque.
Is it the third largest?
It's the third largest mosque in the world.
Yeah.
There are tours available. We took a 1-hour tour, which we got really lucky. We did this with this old man. He spoke very good English. He was also going blind.
Yeah.
So his daughter would guide him into different locations throughout the mosque. And from his memory, he could tell where we were. I guess she would explain to him geographically where we're in the mosque, but he would be able to call out and describe all of the detail that was put into the ceiling work or the columns or the floor and where the marble from each place came from. And he clearly had a love for the place, right? This was volunteer work.
Mm-hmm.
It was most certainly worth the visit, even though not a lot else going.
No, I think it was super cool. I think if you're going to, you don't need to stay in Casablanca all that long.
Two, 3 days max.
2 nights. Yeah, you don't need more than that. No. I think the interesting thing about going to all these mosques, for me at least, the mosques are all so different.
They're very different.
So different. And so it really is cool. I don't think this is a situation where once you've been in one, you've been in them all.
Islam is not cookie cutter. I will say it is not a religion that is very it's this way everywhere. The mosques, even the towers where they have the speakers and the call to prayer are different from country to country.
Yeah.
They're not the same.
But it's the call to prayer in every single country is different. Mm-hmm. It's different in length. It's different. I think it's different in what they say. There is uniqueness everywhere that you go.
Right. And as a student of the Quran, I can tell that, it's so, up to the interpretation of the caller.
So you're now an expert on saints and a student of the Quran. Cool. Okay.
So
keep going.
So in Casablanca, I think, the Hassan II Mosque was the highlight without question. We did have one amazing meal, got to say.
So good.
And this was at Gar al Gorillas.
Yeah, it's like a gorillas restaurant.
And we got lucky here because like we went to the restaurant and we're like, great, okay, this is really great food. It's very unique. It's French Moroccan. But we also, following the meal, we stopped to talk to, I think we'd call her the maitre d' or like the head of the house, the head of the front of house.
Yeah, I just thought she was the manager.
And it was, she's the owner, her husband's the chef.
Yep.
And they actually came out at the end of the night and like we sat and talked to them and had drinks and they told us how they ended up having kids and finding themselves in the industry and how like they settled into
Casablanca. Yeah, it was lovely. Casablanca. We had a great conversation. We did shots of tequila. It was fantastic.
Random.
Yeah, it was great.
Onward from Casablanca, we were heading to the well-visited city of Marrakesh. Sitting inland from the Atlantic, most people know Marrakesh for its Instagram photos of all the like little markets and laneways. They call these souks. Mm-hmm. In the souk, they sell everything. You can get leather goods. You can get ornate copper and metal tea sets. You can get rugs. They have clothes. They have spices. They have detailed glass lanterns. They have Lionel Messi soccer jerseys.
Literally kind of anything.
Mm-hmm. What we found most interesting about Marrakesh itself is that the majority of the housing or the hotels in these areas, they're not really hotels. They're called riads.
Well, yeah, because they used to be a house.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these are different than your typical hotel. And as Janica said, it's because they were formerly family homes, right? And so they're usually 3 to 5 stories in height.
Mm-hmm.
And at the center, at the base, is always, always, always a communal courtyard. And there's usually
open air.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So think of like it's a square building with the center totally exposed to the elements.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually trees in the center courtyard or plants.
Very lush.
And there's usually a fountain. There has to be a fountain at all times. And it's really for a means of which the family to get together and be communal, but also because it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have some sort of water flowing because it's hot in the desert.
Yep.
We stayed at a very beautiful riad. This was Dar Charkia.
Yeah.
And it was a 10-minute walk outside of central Marrakesh.
So, yeah, which was nice.
Yeah, and helpful because you're not in the day-to-day touristy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was run by a small family. And each day we had breakfast included. And we found this very interesting for being pretty independent adults. They gave us a key for the room. Okay, cool. But they didn't give us a key for the front door. And we were like, well, what happens if we come back at 10 o'clock or something? And they're like, there will always be someone here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not so much for safety, but more so that people didn't bring home guests who were not.
I think it's part of it. Yeah.
Safety and maybe guests of the opposite sex.
Maybe. I mean, that's conservative. So.
It's very conservative. So every night you'd come home and you'd rat-a-tat-tat on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And some guy would come out and he'd be like, hey, good evening. Come on in.
Yep.
Very.
Sometimes you'd have to knock more than a few times because he had fallen asleep. And you were like, oh, shit, what am I going to do now? How am I going to get in here? Eventually he'd come a running though.
Just a different way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Dissimilar to Casablanca, Marrakesh is really well preserved. It has tons of historical and religious sites. And in all of that is included are these souks, mm-hmm. the markets. On our first day, we visited the Madrasa Ben Yusuf, which is, I don't want to sound bad, but comparable to a boarding school in America, right? So,
but for religious studies.
Yeah. So it means that students would live on site and they would focus on various subjects, predominantly religious studies, as Janica said. And there were, in this case, at the Ben Yusuf Madrasa, there was 136 rooms and common areas, dining areas, and you can like, go into each and all these rooms and see how the people lived. I mean, there's not a desk and clothing there anymore, but you can see the space.
Mm-hmm.
Going back all the way to the 1500s, the school is actually renowned for its architecture and vibrant use of colored tiles and intricate plaster carvings. So we spent a long time, a couple hours. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
From the madrasa, we located the Jardin Secret or Secret Garden. This particular space draws crowds because it has this like, expansive grouping of plants and trees from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a highly engineered waterway, which the Moroccans discovered that if you can get water from the surrounding mountains, and they had different means of directing it into different places throughout the city, namely the garden here as well, so that everything got watered no matter what, even if there was a drought. Mm-hmm. The garden has seen both prosperity, despair, and abandonment. It's been around for 500 years. So in 2018, the city got together and was like, let's recreate the space as it was during the sultans of the old day. Mm-hmm. And now the garden is as we see it today. We also visited the 19th century Bahia Palace, which was owned by one family and is essentially a huge riad. It's massive. It has two interior courtyards with fountains. Again, super impressive demonstration of Andalusian or Moroccan tile work throughout the entire palace. Mm-hmm. As we talked about, one very important cultural aspect of not only Marrakesh, but of all towns throughout Morocco is the souk. These are covered alleyways that offer independent shopkeepers a small place to sell and oftentimes fabricate a lot of the, like, their own personal wares. So the souks make up the Medina. Mm-hmm. Medina, which is like the downtown shopping area.
The walled city area.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the central part of town where everyone gathers. It's where all the, like, you know, people come and have their coffee and everything for the day is in the Medina. And as we talked about previously, you can find just about anything. So here's where you'll find rugs, the leather shoes, handmade jewelry, and of course, spices. But be prepared to barter because they know you're coming as a tourist and they know you're probably not going to go anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So you're going to come in high on their pricing and you just got to go back and forth and you can walk away with a deal.
Yeah. Yeah, that is an interesting part about Marrakesh, I think, is that most people, that's where they go in Morocco. A lot of people literally only go there. And I think just to note when you were saying the name of the secret garden is that in Morocco, for people that don't know, they speak French and Arabic. A lot of people spoke English. That was not a challenge, but we would definitely try to speak some French, even though we don't speak any French.
Try. Of course, a trip to any souk or any market cannot be complete without a stop to purchase more fragrances.
You can still get oud, you know? Like, I'm gone from the land of oud now, so I needed my oud fix.
So John Cadillo research, per usual, we found ourselves at the Fragantica Marrakesh. Mm-hmm. And this was a small shop in one of the souks, and you are invited into the shop, and at this point in time, you need to begin smelling hundreds and hundreds of bottles of potent fragrances to try and figure out what is your oud.
Make your own blend.
You make your own blend. Mm-hmm. Thank God the guy was like, you know, what are you looking for? And I was like, I don't know shit about it. And he was like, well, here's the tier. There's like three tiers where you start, right? You start with a bass, you have a middle, and you have a high note.
Top note.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he knew Janica was on her way. She had her mission. He knew I had no clue what was going on.
Well, yeah, because I had like Jad, who I met in Dubrovnik 5 million years ago. Shout out to Jad. He had sent me, because he had smelled so good, that's how we ended up talking. He had sent me his mixture, and so that's what I made. So now I just smell exactly like Shad.
And all these ouds were 1/100th of the price.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It was very affordable.
Very affordable. But I will say my favorite thing outside of my oud that I got there is, for those of you that know what a pop socket is, you know, like goes on the back of your phone so you can hold onto your phone
better.
It's
a circular disc that comes off.
It pops out. And so you can like put your fingers on it and you can also prop your phone up to like watch shows and stuff. My pop socket broke.
This is all. Yes.
And so we were like searching around and everywhere in the world that we've been, there's been pop sockets everywhere. And for some reason, it had been, I think before Casablanca that mine broke. And I was like, oh my God, I need a new pop socket. And so we walked by this store and you asked him and he's like, yes. And he gives me one and it's a Muslim woman. She's wearing a hijab. And so now that's my pop socket. And I keep hoping it's going to be a bigger conversation starter than it has been. But I just kind of love that I've got my princess on the back of my phone now.
It's like a teenage girl's pop socket from Morocco. And Janica's cruising around the rest of the world with it. Thinking people are going to, it's going to be a subject to talk. It's like a talking piece.
I'm like, why does this gringo have a Muslim like pop socket? I call her my Muslim princess.
Anyway, traveling southwest from Marrakesh, we were on the bus en route to our next destination, the small oceanside town of Issoira. Smaller in scale than Marrakesh, this quaint little town meets the rough seas of the Atlantic Ocean, where the waves come crashing hard up against the city wall. I don't want to build this up to be, you know, like a similar to Marrakesh. It's not that. But we were staying here, another Riad in this case, in the Riad Darmaya. And it was like, you'd call it like a boutique hotel, I guess. It had 8 rooms.
It was nice. It was more modern looking. It felt very LA vibes, not so traditional.
Yeah. At the roof, there was a semi-functioning hot tub.
Yeah, because it was cold. Yeah. It wasn't super warm.
This was the first place we had to put on a jacket and pants in a very, very long time. It was a rude awakening. We also learned that the town is known for its kiteboarding due to the high winds and shallow bay. But we were not here for ocean activities. No, no, no. Jonica had again booked a 2-hour horseback riding trip through the dunes and along the beach of the coast of Iswara.
Yeah.
The ride started off well, with Jonica getting a younger and more agile horse, and of course, the owners, knowing I'm not real confident, gave me a dependable standby.
Yes. You could say a steed.
A steed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's what horse term for like a old, ineffective horse? A steed?
No, it's just a steed. That's just what you call a horse. My steed.
This was, however, appreciated, because when Jonica's horse decided to go into the ocean and roll over, Jonica almost died.
I've seen videos of this happen online. And so we're walking our horses through the ocean and like trotting them and galloping them through the water, which is amazing. And it's always like a dream come true of mine.
A dream for some.
All of a sudden, my horse stops. And before I even have time to react, this horse is going down. And I was like, oh, shit. Because like if you're in the saddle when this happens, you can break an ankle, you could break a leg, like you could seriously get injured because that horse is trying to roll and you're in the saddle. So thank God I got my feet out of the stirrups. I jumped down into the ocean.
You got soaked.
I was soaked. And yeah, my horse was rolling with everything on. And yeah, that was fun. That's never happened to me before. I hope it never happens again.
Away from the horseback riding. For those kind of seeking a nightlife in Morocco, this is not the place. Okay, we found a few options aside from the cafes and hookah bars, but as most people know, as we've talked about in previous episodes, in Muslim countries, alcohol is, it's not forbidden, but it is very much restricted.
It's few and far between.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And to that extent, as are bars and restaurants that offer such mm-hmm. fare, right?
Libations.
We did manage to find a, I don't call it a lounge or a bar club thing when in town on Saturday night. And it was cool.
It's a club.
It was cool. It was cool. We like you paid, I guess it's a club. We paid an entry fee. So sure,
yeah.
Club. But you get in and there was like live Moroccan music taking place with like a 6-piece band.
It was amazing.
And then they finished and a DJ came on.
He was great.
Yeah. And listen, it was a small town. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing too crazy.
No, not at all. People were dancing. It was a fun time.
Yeah.
Good night.
The last day of our time in Iswara, we had to get out early to the hotel, like 10. So we checked out, but our bus wasn't for a couple hours. So we're like, let's leave the bags. We'll go take a walk around town. We'll get some lunch. And we came across this restaurant and it was pretty unassuming, but we really quickly found ourselves in the most eclectic, cute, well-designed, you wouldn't think about it, but well-designed.
I think it might be the cutest restaurant I've ever been in my entire life.
God, it was great.
And yeah, and it's not like it was sophisticated. Like you said, it was eclectic. Like, it was a cacophony of things, but it worked.
Yeah, Dar Baba, it was called.
My God.
You had to walk up 4 flights of stairs, but then it was Moroccan antiques mixed with pictures of Jesus Christ and Elvis Presley.
And like mid-century modern furniture,
yeah.
And rugs and every color you can imagine. It was great.
We were talking about, we were sitting there. If you had anything that was matching in this place, aside from like, I don't know, the glassware, it would have been off. You had to have, everything had to be different. So every chair had to be different. Every table had to be different. The light fixtures were different above every table. Great restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really rare find.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was here that we enjoyed our final meal. Continuing down the Atlantic coast, after leaving Iswara, we were making our way to the closest surf destination that I could find in all of Morocco, and this is the town of Tagazout. This town is known for holding large surf contests that occur during January and February when the swells are at their peak. However, we were there in mid-September, so things were just
classic for us.
Just getting going. We booked a hotel using American Express points, which offset a pretty significant cost and hit to our budget. Mm-hmm. When the bus pulled into the station, the hotel's about 40 minutes away, and we knew this. We were like, we got to get a cab. Okay, no big deal. But we immediately dreaded the process of negotiating a cab ride, because every time you get somewhere new, you're like, okay, how is this going to work? Am I going to get ripped off? And in this case, to our surprise, this older man provided us with a set price. He's like, He's like, here's what it costs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, that's, try to negotiate. I was like, that's a great price, but certainly like I'm coming in at half that. And he was like, this is not Marrakesh. He's like, you do not need to worry about us taxi drivers ripping you off.
Yeah.
He's like, this is the price. I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And because the cost to get to the hotel was very reasonable, we agreed. We're like, yeah, okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
He was great. And he quickly became our like close acquaintance.
Became our driver.
He became, yeah. So mm-hmm. We've talked about this before. But like
in Sri Lanka, little tuk-tuk guy.
And it happened in the Philippines too. It's like when there's a place that you visit, And you like befriend a trustworthy cab driver, a tuk-tuk driver,
and you have to get around and you don't have your own means of transportation.
You've got to get a guy.
Yeah.
And he very quickly became the guy because listen, they're honest. Mm-hmm. They agree on prices in advance.
He's dependable.
He gave me his WhatsApp number and most of the time he's like, yep. And he was quickly responsive. Mm-hmm. Right. And so much so that we arranged to have him drive us back to the airport on our day of departure. And he was there early. He was mm-hmm. like, yep, I'll be there. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. So it clutched. It's a necessary.
It's a nice thing to be able to lock down when you can.
Yeah. Fundamental to traveling. Mm-hmm. So as we talked about, the motivation to visit this part of Morocco was for the surf. But the weather was not great.
No.
The swells were not ideal. This happens. So of the 3 days, we got really one solid day where sun was out, waves were good. Surfing's not the only thing on offer in Tagazout. So the small beachside town also is like really walkable. It reminded us, if anybody knows, of Sayulita, which is on the mm-hmm. Pacific coast of Mexico. So
way back in the day.
Yeah, hippie.
You can tell it's becoming more high end. We went to a restaurant, I think our first night.
Oh, yes.
That was very
Tulum,
fancy.
Very Tulum-esque.
Felt very Tulum. So you kind of can tell. And it was all full of Americans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Taking surf classes. So it's definitely going that route for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those towns where things just kind of move a little slower, and that's
but a very cute town.
Yeah. Well, I was able to get up on a surfboard. Jonica had the best hammam experience of her life.
I'm just so happy because if you listen to the turkey episode, the hammam was not my favorite. I felt like
you had a bad experience.
I was getting drowned. I felt like it was like a machine. It wasn't relaxing. I didn't have the fluffing off of the skin like I thought I would. This was exactly what I wanted. It was private. This woman scrubbed the shit out of me. Like, I've never seen balls of my skin come off me like that.
Hot.
And then I felt like a baby afterwards. Like, literally like a brand new baby. And it was fantastic. And it was funny because I had many people be like, you have to do a hammam when you're in Morocco. And I was like, I've already done one. It's not my favorite thing. So much better. Skip them in Turkey. Do it in Morocco.
Okay. But before we continue, let's take a quick break.
So from Tagazout, we flew a little over an hour to the town, shouldn't say town, it's like a city, it's a big city actually, of Rabat.
It's the capital.
And it's like, sorry, capital. So this is definitely a planes, trains, and automobiles day. Took a quick cab to the train station and then took a 3-hour train to the city of Fez. But This was one of those amazing rare times where the travel worked out perfectly and everything just kind of fell right into place and we arrived much earlier than we thought we would. Unfortunately, however, once again, the air con in the train car was not working, and so that was another long, sweaty ride. Upon arriving in Fez, we took a cab to our final riad, and once again, it did not disappoint. Our room was massive, the service and breakfast was incredible, and once again, we are right outside the Medina, which is, they say, the largest in Morocco. It's big. I would say that Marrakesh felt more condensed. Maybe this is bigger because it's more spread out. But they definitely like to brag that it is the biggest. I feel like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like we kind of had a love-hate relationship with Fez.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people hustling there, right? And it's like you can't fault them for trying to make a living and make some money. But the second we would walk out the door of our riad, someone would be there trying to get us to take a tour with them, walk us to where we were going, yeah, telling us that roads were closed.
You're going the wrong direction.
This is the wrong direction.
This is how you get to the Medina. They would guide you, and then they would expect money.
Yeah.
And they're hustling. Like they're, yeah, there's not, you don't have a choice.
No, and I think we had read about this, so we expected this, and there was one time that we walked down an alleyway, and it truly was a dead end, and someone had told us that it was, and we're like, yeah, whatever, we don't believe you. But you just kind of have to do that, and you kind of, I don't know, you hope that they know that it's because other people are lying to you, mm-hmm, and so you just kind of get a little jaded.
You protect yourself, because otherwise you're going to be taken for.
Yeah, and this was, I feel like, outside of some overpriced taxis in Marrakesh, this is the only city where I do feel like we were taken advantage of.
Yes.
Twice.
Yeah.
Once by a taxi driver who really overcharged us, and once by the laundry place. We went to go get laundry
done. Forget about this. Jesus.
$45 to do laundry.
There's only two places in town to do laundry.
Yeah.
So they have you by the...
You have to.
They have you. They have you. And you. We had a lot as well.
We did have a lot.
We had probably 15 pounds of laundry.
But we had a lot when we were in Oman. And that's the last time that we were like, when we went to go do laundry in Oman, it was $20. And we're like, holy shit, this is highway robbery. And then here for it to be $45.
Yeah. And I was like, for water and electricity, is somebody going to handfold them with their feet? What's going to happen
they
here?
They pressed everything, which I would have been like, can I pay half? And like, you don't need to iron my 8-month-old t-shirt, like, come on.
We don't argue about much, but we are definitely argue about the cost of laundry in Fez, I'll tell you that.
Anyway, one of the things that you have to do in Fez is go see the leather tannery. And getting to a good place to see this is not easy. You're wandering around, and as you get down closer to where the tannery is, there's men lining the sides of these narrow alleyways.
And like 4 feet across. This is not a street.
No. And they're all telling you that they have the best view, that it's free, that the place down the way is closed. And again, we don't believe you because we had done some research and we knew where we wanted to go. And so we walk up and this guy who is at the door tells us that his dad is going to give us the tour. It wasn't his dad.
No. Clearly not your father.
Anyway, the father, in air quotes, brings us up to the top rooftop area that overlooks the tannery. And the tannery is these huge vats of different, not chemicals because it's all natural, but like chemicals in a way that like go through different processes of the leather to become usable to make goods out of.
And these are not to interrupt you, but like, when you say vats, you're talking like 5-6 foot in diameter, tiled interior, mm-hmm, spaces that you can climb into.
Yeah, these men stand.
They stand them, and they're, mm-hmm, probably 5,200 of them.
Yeah,
it was not a joke. It wasn't as though this was like, oh, there's four on display for you guys to see how leather goods are made. This was an active tannery.
Yeah, and it's a whole process, right? Like I didn't know about this. It's like they get the skin of the animal, and they have to kind of like break down the skin. And in Fez, they use pigeon poop because they need the ammonia from the feces, and that breaks down the hide.
It gets the grease and the fats off of the animal.
Yeah, and it stinks. Like, it's
foul odor.
Not a good smell.
You see the tourists walking around with handfuls of mint.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the foreign tourists can't handle the smell.
Yeah. I gagged more than once, for sure. It was not pleasant. And the crazy thing is, too, so it goes from like that. And in Europe, I think they said that they use urine because it's also the ammonia.
Yeah.
But for some reason, there's so many pigeons. So that makes sense why they use the pigeon poop. But so it goes from that into like different dyeing and drying processes. And it all depends on the color. And they use all these different natural things for dyeing the leather, the different colors. And there's goat leather.
Saffron.
And, yep. And camel. And like all and everything.
They had
everything.
Cow. Yeah. They had goat. They had camel.
Yeah. So totally crazy. It was very cool to learn about the process. It was very smelly. And the thing that I cannot wrap my brain around is these men, like we said, they get in these vats.
Yeah.
They're there. You guys smell all the time. That's what you smell like for life. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. And it's these chemicals, albeit natural, are still abrasive. There was like, they were putting lime from like limestone in the vats and they're crawling around in it. And the ammonia that's in the pigeon waste is in there and the dyes. I mean, OSHA would have a field day with this.
So a part of this process is that, you know, you're basically taking a tour in someone's leather goods store, right? So once they educate you on the process, they bring you back down through the store. And you're not charged for the tour, but they're trying to get you to buy different leather goods. So I was trying, you know, he wanted me to buy a leather jacket really bad. I was like, I'm not really a leather jacket person. But we did go down. We each got two pairs of shoes. I feel like for a fairly good price, we negotiated.
Yeah.
And
we paid $25, I think, for each pair of shoes.
Yeah, I think so. So it was good. And then we're leaving. And the guy at the door who said that his dad was going to give us the tour, the dad, again in air quotes, was like, you need to give him a tip. I was like, why? Because he opened the door and lied to me? So I think I maybe gave him a dollar or something. He was really pissed off.
Rubbed Jonica the wrong way.
I was like, why did I tip you? Anyway, one thing to note is that we had done a lot of research and we decided to do most of our shopping in Fez. So hence the leather goods. That's what they're known for. It's also just kind of a less touristy place. It's sure there is still tourists, but it's not nearly as touristy as Marrakesh. And so in addition to the leather goods, rugs.
Right. And to be clear, just adding on what you said,
mm-hmm.
Fez is known as the artisan capital of Morocco.
Yes.
So that's where the majority of these items are actually made.
Mm-hmm. And then they go elsewhere.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the luxury of being able to go to other places.
Mm-hmm.
So while being in Marrakesh, we were like, let's just hold off. Let's not go crazy buying anything because at the end of the day, you'll get this in other cities.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this always happens when you're on vacation. We've talked about this. You go somewhere and you're so enamored and in awe of the things that you're seeing, you know, like the lanterns and the blah, blah, blah. But eventually, after seeing them time and time and time again, you're like, do I really want this?
Right. Is this going to fit into my decor?
So that was good because I feel like right when we got to Marrakesh, I kind of wanted to go crazy. And then by the time we got to Fez, I was like, I'm good. Like, I don't need to. But the one thing that I knew we were going to get was a rug. And before leaving the U.S.
This was undisputed.
A year ago, I had been warning Farber that I was going to buy a rug in Morocco if we were there. And we did. We bought a rug. I had made mood boards of the design that I wanted. I shared it with you. You agreed as well. And you have to obviously have the size in mind, the colors in mind, because you go to these places and they have hundreds, if not thousands, of rugs.
They're all folded up and like they'll take them out and they'll keep opening them and opening them. And they'll just keep showing you. And yeah, if you don't have
something in mind,
if you don't have a focus of any kind, you will be there for hours.
Or you're going to end up with something that you don't actually end up wanting or goes with anything in your house.
Yeah, you got to be focused here.
Yeah. So we went to one place that I'd read about, and they had much more traditional styles. But as we're leaving, there's another couple there, and we start talking to them, and they were from Tassie, so Tasmania, because, you know, Australians can't finish a full word. But they told us to go down the alley to this place, Coin Berber. And that's where we found our rug. And We looked at several. We narrowed it down. We negotiated and sent it back to our second storage space, which is down in D&B's garage.
Oh, Mom and Dad, thank God you guys have a place to put all this shit.
But the rug is so beautiful. I keep looking back at the photo and I am so excited to see her in wherever our next house is. So from Fez, we took another 3-hour train ride to Tangier, and our hotel, nicely enough, was only a 5-minute walk away from the train station. And I have to admit, after these riads that we stayed in were beautiful, they were incredible, but it was kind of nice to be in a more Western style hotel for a bit with a gym and a pool. We could order buckets of ice. And the good thing was, is we just happened to arrive in Tangier the day Tan Jazz started. Jazz Fest. Hot local tip. So we got tickets to go see the Gypsy Kings, which we were pretty excited about. And it was very fun. We're both fans, right? Like, not like crazy fans, but I'm like, yeah, I'd go see the Gypsy Kings. Why not?
There's no better rendition of Hotel California that it's played except done by the Gypsy Kings.
And I was like, why not? Like, it was the only band that I knew that was playing at Tan Jazz. But anyway, huge stage in this outdoor large square, packed with people. Everyone got pissed at the end of the night because they ran out of alcohol. It was a big to-do. And yeah, the band wrapped up about 1:30 in the morning. And so we had to wander around and try to find a cab, which luckily we did, which is great. So then the rest of the time in Tangier, we went to the local Medina and Souk. We bought some of the best olives in the entire world. I'll get into those in a little bit. And we also took a day trip to Chef Chouin, or the Blue City. This was about a 2.5-hour drive to get there. And once we got there, we had an incredible tour guide who led us around for hours. And during this tour, he told us the reason why it's painted blue. So not unlike the Pink City in India, this is very much to attract tourists. And it does. Like, this place is chocked full of tourists. It's so touristy. But there was a film or a documentary.
It was a TV show in Morocco that was based on a family home that was blue on the outside.
But they painted others, so there were like multiple ones. And so people started to come to this place because they thought that the whole city was blue.
It was for a TV show, essentially.
Yes, yeah.
And then it tipped. It tipped.
Yeah,
it tipped
because
the point
people would go there and they'd be like, I want to visit the blue city, and there'd only be a couple of blue buildings. But then they realized, oh, we can do this.
This was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, and so they painted the entire city blue.
All the houses are blue.
And that is why it's now the blue city.
Yeah.
So just an Instagram paradise.
No historical reality whatsoever. It's fabricated, right?
Yeah.
The entire thing is fabricated.
It's beautiful. It is. The Pink City was beautiful. It's just funny that, like, obviously through social media, it's whole towns have like changed their appearance so that people go
to drive
there
tourism
to take photos.
Yeah.
So no, it was very beautiful. It was a fun tour. We learned a lot. There were some fun people on the tour. And people stay there. I don't think you need to stay there personally.
No.
I don't think that we felt rushed or like we missed anything by not staying there. If you have the time, sure. But totally good to just do a day trip if that's all you have.
It's also kind of like if you were to stay, we experienced this in Dubrovnik, where every day is groups and groups of tour buses that come through. Mm-hmm. So you're there, you're mm-hmm. enjoying yourself, you eat breakfast, you go outside, you walk around, then you're just bombarded by people. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
So beautiful one, I would say a day trip.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And with that, it was time for us to depart Morocco after 3 amazing weeks.
Whew, yeah, that was a lot.
I know. A lot to talk about. Sorry, guys. Long episode.
As you can,
and we're not done yet.
Yeah, as you can tell, clearly there's a lot to see. There's some amazing experiences in the unique country that is Morocco. But before we get into our loves and our learns, let's take a real quick break.
Okay, there is a lot to choose from on this leg of our journey. You got Montenegro, you've got Italy and Morocco. So what is it, Farber? There better not be one for each. There better not be five of them.
I didn't do. I thought about it, and I was like, I knew it. I'm gonna hold back that urge. I gotta say, visiting the tanneries in Fez was a very cool, old school, olfactory at that experience. The smell is real, but so is the tradition and the history. Mm-hmm. And clearly, animal hides are cured and presented in different ways all around the world. And the process for doing so is different in every place you go. But having this old man sort of go through the process with us and explain the fabrication and how they like treat each one of the like the different types of hides, he knew everything from making it, treating it, to selling it. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of my love. And because I do always have more than one, I do have more than one love usually. Mm-hmm. Love is abundant. After visiting Oman, after visiting Turkey, and after visiting Morocco, which for us, these were the first real experiences we've had with Muslim culture, I have to say that the level of devotion to Islam, it can vary from place to place. So I say this meaning not every Muslim country is ultra-conservative just because they practice Islam. And the commitment by the followers does also vary from place to place. And we kind of touched on this, but Islam is different in Turkey than it is in Oman, than it is in Morocco, than it is in Yemen or Saudi Arabia. So I think the idea here is that...
Or Indonesia
as well, right? So like, I really like that Morocco showed us a different perspective than other places. And this is important because most people in the Western culture feel this is like one way. Islam is one way. And it's not. It's like every other religion. There's people interpret what they want to and follow what they want to. So Morocco offered a different version of that.
The Gospel of Farber. What's your learn? How many of these do you have?
All right. Just one. Keep it safe and sound here. So when touring the Amalfi Coast with the boys in Italy, Tim, Angelo, Ricardo, and Eric, we had the chance to go.
I was there too.
Yeah, the boys. We had the chance to go swim in the Grande Beach, which is in Positano. And this is like this real quintessential Italian coastline, like rocky beach. And
you've seen pictures.
Yeah. Like think of George Clooney, you know, like on like the Italian coast. That's what this looks like.
The talented Mr. Ripley.
Sure. It looks like a Bond film, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but because I didn't bring a swimsuit with me, I still really wanted to go in the ocean when we were in Positano.
It was hot.
So, and part of this trip, I've also learned that for every place we go, I either want to, if it's a lake, if it's an ocean, whatever the body of water is, I have to touch it. I got to get in it. Not necessarily swim in it, but I definitely need to touch it. And if it's warm, I'll swim in it. So it was here that I was going to go swimming in the oceans of, you know, right off the coast of Positano. Mm-hmm. Stripping down to my underwear, you, Ricardo, Eric, and Tim all kind of started laughing and giving me shit because my tan line that I had is from a swimsuit and not underwear. So you have this sort of contrasting colors, if you will, on my thighs.
This is very stark white thighs.
I was the only one on the beach that had this creative of tan lines. And so there, I from that point, I realized, oh shit, I have to get in this water fast. So I like hightailed it into the water, and knowing the same thing would happen when I got out to get to my towel, I would also be the only person that clearly didn't bring a swimming suit and was just wearing underwear, ran from the water to my towel.
Not that they care.
Lesson learned, just carry your swimsuit in the bag.
Yeah, all the time. Have it with you.
That's the learn.
Yep.
All right, my dear. Then what is your love?
I mean, I didn't want to just phone it in and say Monopoly again, because that would have been too easy. And I've obviously talked about that at length and cried for the first time ever on this podcast. I will say that getting lost in the Medinas and souks of Marrakesh and Fez was my love. It can be a total sensorial overload, right? You've got the colors, the textures, the lighting, the smells, the people, people selling things, people hand making things, all manner of goods and food and spices and just wandering, not knowing where you're going and knowing that you can't trust your phone because your phone has no idea either, that you're gonna get lost and that's okay. It's kind of a nice way to just be able to meander. And one of the things that I love too is I thought that it would be like high pressure, like buy something when you walked by all the little shops and stuff. But I never really felt that. Sure, people were like, hello, lady, come take a look. But it never went further than that. So that was also very nice because I hate the pressure.
I think they get it that people who are visiting don't like that.
Yeah.
So they're cool about it. And they let you roam and cruise through and observe what you would want to. And if you want to buy something, you'll come over.
Yeah, that's great.
Finishing it out, what is your learn?
I hinted at this earlier. You always like, you think of olives, right? You think Greece, you think Italy. Never would I've ever thought Morocco. Morocco has the best olives in the world. I will fight somebody because I eat a lot of olives. You know this. This is always my go-to snack. There's all these different varieties that I'd never tried before. I don't even know what they're called. They're like small, greenish, yellowish ones that have like a pale, almost like white pit. And they add preserved lemons to them. It's the combination of those flavors. Like I'm salivating right now. Like I want them so bad. You can also, they have tons of different kinds. We got some that were like chili harissa that were super spicy. It's the best. I feel like I'm gonna learn how to make so many different types of olives and mixes when I get back to wherever we get back to.
So this could kind of be like a second love, not so much a learn, huh?
No, it's a learn because I never would have thought Morocco and olives. You think Greece, you think Italy. I did not know. And it's like a big thing. Like you sit down at any restaurant and they bring you olives.
That's true.
I would have never known that like olives is a big part of what they eat. I don't know. Maybe that's naive of me, but still, I learned it. And preserved lemons and olives.
Delicious.
Would you ever pair those together?
No.
No? So it's a learn. It's a learn of a really good thing that I'm going to make when I get to a place.
There we go. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for episode 27.
Sorry, it's a long one, guys. We just had a lot to get through because our hope and our goal has been to catch up to more of current times, right? Which we're really close to. I think that the next episode will probably actually get us right on track. So
Yeah. Forgive
us for the long one. Hopefully it was a good one, though. And until next time.
Goodbye from Argentina.
Bye. Bye.